Welcome to MGO Podcast 11.5. Nothing bad happened this weekend. That's good. Well, it's okay. Nothing bad happened.
Elorm Lumor.
What?
Elorm Lumor.
Okay, but what?
It's a Rutgers guy.
That's right. I remember they put him up on the screen and his name was Elorm.
He made a tackle on True Wilson at one point, and I gotta say that's probably the best name combination to run into each other this football season.
I kind of feel like his name went through Google Translate and back, and he used to be called Josh, and then he got translated to Malaysian, and then back, and now he's Elorm.
I can't say I know the origin.
I mean, it kind of sounds like
I'm not looking at his player bio page because I'm just hoping it's like, you know, Martian.
It's like a closed captioning mess up.
He might
it's something out of an Ursula Le Guin novel,
or possibly like a higher up at Scientology named him.
Yeah,
because that's like one of their thetans whatever.
Once you accrue enough thetans or whatever,
tell you the story of Elorm. Anyway, Rutgers happened, but we're live at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor downtown. Actually, we're taped. I always say we're live. We are live.
Currently.
Yeah,
currently.
Living and speaking live.
By the time you hear this, we will have been taped. I'm Brian
Cook.
Going
into a recorder. I'm A. Sandbender.
Dave Nasternak.
He's just not going to introduce himself. He's just going to say his name.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming my
every
thing.
Week.
All right, well, we're going to persist.
We're going to push through it.
This is the MGO Podcast. Our presenting sponsors are The Bow Store and Underground Printing. Our other sponsors are Homeshore Lending, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Perrin Brewing. So, 52-0 over Rutgers, and people, I went out on Saturday, and people were coming up to me, and they were like, hey, that... Do you feel better? And I was like,
sorry.
And I was like, trying to be like, kind of, but not. I mean, it's just Rutgers.
It was like, I don't feel worse, which is a good start.
That's exactly right. Nothing bad happened.
There were moments that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
There were signs of. There were things I saw that would make me feel better if they happened against not Rutgers.
Yeah,
and that's what the nature of playing Rutgers.
They did what they had to do. Like less than this, if
they covered.
Well, if they win 17-0, we're kind of like, this is. I mean, there's been zero life. There's no improvement. But
it's not 2014, so we blew out Rutgers.
Sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't really tell you how good you are.
No, but it gives you a chance to play next week.
It tells you you're not like a total debacle of a team.
Yeah, but when the first drive ends on a 48-yard, 5-yard out, it's kind of like, I'm glad that happened.
Yeah.
But I don't know how like you can extrapolate this to different
games.
Like they took consecutive false start or procedure penalties when they were trying to punt, which is like...
But, I mean, it's Rutgers.
Yeah, but so this is what we are saying. We're saying that it is Rutgers.
Right.
And then only so much can be derived from any number of points.
No, it's not a rescuing. It's just that was at least some signs of life.
There was a rushing Rutger in this game. There was, right?
Can we define that again?
A rushing Rutger is when a team has fewer yards in that phase of the game than the opponent has points.
Yeah.
Yeah. They ended up with 46.
Depends if you want to take sacks out.
We do take sacks out because not doing that reduces the number of Rutgers. It's not fair, but it's what we do anyway.
Okay.
We can have like an S&P rushing Rutger, which this is not. If you guys want to be like
I don't
super
care.
Persnickety.
I've had to hear like the 2013 Michigan State rushing total so many times that I'm okay being unfair to our advantage.
So the rushing Rutger against Rutger. Did you see
seems
that
apropos.
They put up the standings on BTN and they actually spelled it Rutger. Like there was a screenshot that someone put on Twitter where it's like all the teams in this division, and then that
they've done that multiple times because I grabbed that at one point like weeks ago.
Wow.
Did we start a thing?
We didn't start a thing.
But I think the Crimson Quarry started a thing.
It has to have been. It was probably there.
It came from that corner of the internet, shtick, I think.
Yes, that corner. The people, the lizard posters.
Just like the bottom of the Big Ten weird.
I still don't understand lizard Twitter, but anyway. So the offense, things happened. And
Shea Patterson looked pretty good.
Coherency?
Yeah, so they got rid of almost all the RPOs.
Yeah.
It was just straight play action and running the ball, and they started off running the ball. They mixed in enough runs, so I think you saw the pass protection largely improved. And you go back to the Wisconsin game, and in the Wisconsin game, Michigan had 15 pass pro pluses from me before they had a single minus. And then I think, the walls cave in because you have a total of 10 running back carries in the whole game, and they're just teeing off for three quarters. That didn't happen here. Michigan did give up occasional pressures that Patterson was able to not suffer from because he was able to throw in rhythm sometimes.
Yeah, they also did a nice job of getting him on the move a little bit.
Yeah, they had those waggles, and then they weren't dumping it off from the flat. They were hitting like 10, 12-yard comeback routes.
Yeah, it just felt like Gattis did a way better job in this game of getting Patterson in his comfort zone.
Yeah, and he didn't run at all, so
yeah,
that also happened.
Except on the goal line.
Yeah, except yeah.
Goal line back Shea Patterson. He is this year's Ben Mason.
The naked boot. So he had a naked boot and a quarterback sneak, and then he had a scramble for touchdowns. Not exactly a Denard three-touchdown performance.
No, he had four rushing yards.
Yeah, four rushing yards, three touchdowns. That is Ben Mason.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He is the heir to the Khalid Hill Ben Mason throne.
But, I mean, I think you saw Michigan kind of come to Jesus a lot. So they went under center near the goal line on those plays.
Yeah.
Thus enabling the naked boots.
Also nicely used tempo when they got down on the red zone.
They used tempo. We saw a bona fide bubble screen to Peoples Jones.
It was a, that was a come to Jesus moment, and also a like, I might throw things moment.
thus enacting some speed and space.
Yes. Well, it's just like so exciting to see all three of those wide receivers on the same side of like the ball.
Yeah. And then they took downfield shots.
Yep. Yes.
And, Michigan, I think it was their first touchdown. They're in third and long. And they're like, all right, why don't we just throw a fade to Peoples Jones?
That was their second touchdown. Because the first touchdown was the Collins 5-yard out.
So their second touchdown is they're in third and long. And it's just like, well, we have these guys. Let's use them. And it works. And then by the third quarter, when Patterson has a fade intercepted, everybody on Twitter is like, it's fine, keep doing that.
Yeah,
because it was way underthrown, and Collins still had a shot at it.
Yeah,
and
given where the Michigan fan base is at in terms of like freaking out at anything, for them to be like an interception, that's cool.
Yeah,
is really something.
It was like 38-0 at that point,
but people weren't totally sanguine. Still,
no,
I was getting complaints about the running game deep into the game.
But it's a third and four, right? So not completing that and having it intercepted.
It was a punt.
It was a punt.
Yeah.
And I saw something else on Twitter that will be in UV this week that was interesting is that something like 41% of NFL interceptions this year have had a win probability impact of less than 5%.
Huh.
And there are a lot of
because they're just airing it out deep on third down.
And there are a lot of just straight out incompletions that have that same effect.
Yeah.
So, like, in terms of win percentage swing, like, if you have a third and six and you don't complete that pass.
Because the end of a drive tends to have a pretty big probability impact.
So, those kind of punts downfield, I mean, they do end your drive, but they are equivalent to punts. And then the upside is a lot higher than, 4-yard out, usually.
I mean, especially if you have the right people.
And, like, not just equivalent to punts, they're equivalent to good punts a lot of the time.
That's true, yeah. So everybody is on board with the bombs away plan. So am I, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, we've been screaming for it
since April.
Of which year?
So somebody was saying on Twitter a little bit that they gave Patterson a few more half field reads.
I mean, those waggles are half field reads. I mean, the The thing with Patterson is often he's just going to read half the field anyway.
So you might as well just...
So you might as well roll it out, make it happen.
Although I think he did a better job in this game of, like, there were times where he had all day to sit in the pocket and Rutgers was rushing for and sitting back, and we've seen him have issues with that before.
Yeah, there was a crossing route to Eubanks that kind of stood out in that regard.
Yeah. Where
he had more patience than he usually does.
Yeah, he was waiting for routes to open up, and I'm sure some of that was the comfort level with his blocking up front and knowledge that Rutgers was probably not going to get to him anytime soon. But
yeah,
there was still progress.
There were... So it kind of felt like parts of the Wisconsin game where he'd have forever in the pocket, but he wouldn't take advantage of it. And then the percentage of plays where he really did get a serious rush was reduced. But they weren't gone, so I think Mayfield gave up two fairly clean pressures.
Mm-hmm.
I think Runyon gave up one or two as well. So we were hoping that maybe Mayfield would be an improvement on Runyon as the pass protector. And I think three games in, you know, he's given up one or two pretty clean pressures in every game. So I think that is probably not on the table.
Still a work in progress at this point.
Right. So then you have two tackles who, while they're not the Bushel Beatty level or like the Runyon's first game level,
you have to scheme around them.
Elysio.
Right. You can't just plug and play them and be like, all right, this is going to be fine. We can concentrate on other stuff. So most of the time it's going to be fine, but you're never going to have that like security that you really need to like be like, all right.
Almost just forget about it.
Yeah, I can just hang back in the pocket and see what happens. So, yep. I'm not too concerned about the run game.
No, neither am I. I mean, all three of the main running backs easily cracked 4 yards a carry.
Does that sound like enough to you against Rutgers? I mean...
Based on the way they were playing, nobody had a run longer than 15 yards. And, like, you know, considering that, like, they were consistently getting decent chunks. Like, Turner had several decent runs. Haskins had a few nice bursts up the middle. Charbonnet got what he could get. Like,
So I pretty much agree with that. And then you're looking at a lot of, like, 6-on-8 run surfaces.
Right.
Yeah.
There seemed like to be at least a few stack boxes they ran into.
So, like, Michigan would get something blocked up and then a safety would go hit Turner 2 yards downfield.
Right.
Or Turner would be able to dodge that and get some yards. And so...
And then if you're looking at, like, the overall stats, like, things got dragged down by a bunch of, like, Ben Van Sumer and Nick Capitina carries and stuff like that.
Sure.
Or all of those one-yard touchdown
Drew
runs.
Wilson. Sorry, Brian.
Drew Wilson got
four carries
in the first
13
half.
Yards.
Yeah, that's okay. He's our pass protector. but back to kind of the 6 versus 8 point.
Yes.
Michigan had virtually no quarterback runs in this game. They didn't really run zone read. They mostly just ran from the shotgun. And if that continues, I think it's going to be hard for Michigan to have a lot of runs longer than 15 yards. Because the thing about spread offense is it puts you in situations as a defense where one error is a lot of yards.
Mm-hmm.
And right now Michigan is in a situation where an error from the defense is one fewer free hitter. And so they've only got one. So the interesting thing to me is when Milton came in, and Hassan Haskins went nuts, right? And that's not about Hassan Haskins because he had these gaping holes. And a lot of that was, all right, Milton's in. He doesn't have an oblique injury. He's the third string quarterback. He's probably going to keep the ball some. And so they started playing like there was going to be a legitimate zone read threat to the point where they started scrape exchanging. And so when they start the scrape exchange, the linebacker flies out, and then Michigan's offensive tackles are watching, seeing the scrape exchange, and then stopping for the defensive end. So then you've got the huge gap because there's no weak side linebacker. There's no weak side end. And then you block down the other way and people are flowing because it's like outside zone or inside zone.
Yeah.
And they're expecting that they need to run. And then you have the huge gap. So to me, inserting Milton into this game showed more of what Michigan's run game could be if they had a legitimate functioning zone read game.
Running quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's something they probably did not plan to break out against Rutgers.
No,
reasons.
The exact same thing happened in last year's Rutgers game. Like, Michigan has just, like, rolled through Wisconsin, and they beat Michigan State with the arc read.
Penn State, too, I think.
All those games featured the arc read very heavily, and then they put it away for last year's Rutgers game, and Michigan rushes for, like, 4 yards a carry.
Right.
Yeah.
So
This is, you know, limited running game by design.
Well, and so, but the larger point is, like, a lot of the things that we've been seeing in the first three games where the run game just isn't functioning are because it's tough to have a spread running game that works without having a running quarterback, because that evens up your numbers. It turns the shotgun from an advantage, a disadvantage, to an advantage.
Yeah.
So,
so then the question kind of becomes, do they bring those things out next week?
Yes.
For the love of God, I hope so.
I mean, but, like, you know, they didn't previously, right? And it almost cost me against Army. I mean, I don't know if it would have made a difference against Wisconsin.
A lot of it has been they've had it in there and they just haven't made the reads.
Yeah, and part of that is Patterson comfortable with it since he has the oblique issue?
Yeah.
Which is the kind of thing that can linger and get re-aggravated.
Right.
So even if you think that he's capable of doing it in a game that you're not going to win 52-0, is that worth it? No. So I get the approach here. It kind of implies that, yes, he's still hurt. Yes, this might be a season-long thing. Yes, we might not have the kind of quarterback rushing game that we relied on last year.
It might also just imply that it's Rutgers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, I mean, how many quarterback keeps were there against Wisconsin?
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. That was,
it wasn't
that
McCaffrey.
It was McCaffrey.
I mean, obviously the hope here is that, like, there's going to be a kind of light switch moment.
Right. I mean, if they can do what they did last year.
But, like, it wasn't going to happen against Rutgers. Like, I don't think it was just was not going to happen.
But the overall point is that, like, even against a Rutgers, your run game is going to be hampered if you're a spread offense that doesn't run the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're talking about light switch moments, we did see that a little bit in the passing game. So hopefully that same light would go on in that situation if they can break it out.
So both running backs, I thought, Charbonnet and Turner, both had good moments on stretch zone. So often in those situations, you're going to cut, and then you're going to see a guy on one side of a blocker, and you're going to have to make a quick decision. They were able to do that a couple times. I did think Turner missed one pretty obvious opportunity to cut up. But those guys show pretty good vision, and Turner continues to be very slippery and difficult to get a handle on.
And even becoming powerful.
Yes and no. Like,
I mean, he's had a few plays where
he's still difficult to tackle.
Right.
Yeah. But if you do get a stick on him, he's still pretty small. There was a run where he made a cut and it looked like he was going to get 8 yards. And then a Rutgers guy came up and hit him on the nose and he stopped dead. And by contrast, you know, his touchdown run where he's hit at like the 4, mm-hmm. and then he's able to stay up until there's like the lurching rugby scrum.
Like that was impressive balance and power.
Yeah. 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 So he has the ability, but if you do get a nose hit on him, he's not going to power through it like a Charbonnet might.
Mason.
Yeah. So, but he's good. And I just continually get more confused about the fact that he got 6 carries last week.
I mean,
I don't want to relitigate that, but I guess I do.
I mean,
it just didn't make any sense.
No, I mean, the whole week didn't make any sense, but it's kind of like, that's what I was saying earlier about this week, is you want to see some improvements, and then hopefully, I don't know, you flush all that, and you move on and make better decisions in the future.
Yeah. A couple of minor notes. Luke Schoonmaker had a nice catch and run that kind of showed some athleticism.
Yeah, you could see the spark score there.
Yeah, I have a lot invested in him because he's a sleeper of the year.
And
so
of course.
He's moved ahead of Muhammad, so that's good. Right?
For your sleeper of the year.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's good.
Also, did we see it? I feel like I saw a lot of Eric All, necessarily getting targeted.
Without McCune.
Yeah.
So the second guy was either All or Schoonmaker. So, yeah, you saw more.
All had he did a nice job of doing the ole. I'm not actually blocking you in the back on the Nico Collins catch and run touchdown.
Yeah. He did.
Yeah, and they actually were going to – they flagged it and then they picked it up because it was like, you know.
He didn't really do it.
He didn't really touch
it. Didn't really do it. So yeah. I'm glad that they internalized that, because that happened on the People's Own punt return that got called back for a really bad reason. Finally, Ronnie Bell keeps doing stuff, and at some point it's like, oh, he's good. And in this game, I think you saw it for a couple of different wide receivers. You remember the Tariq Black like hitch against Wisconsin that should have been
ran the wrong way?
Should have been 9 yards, turned to 5.
Yeah.
And then there was kind of a cascade effect on from that. So in this game, you saw guys take maybe one or two lateral steps and then get vertical. So Bell was able to get around guys by, you know, he'd be coming off a hitch and a route moving right. He'd take two steps left, get past one of his guys, and then go vertical. And that
is better than spinning sideways.
It's good. Yeah. And hopefully this is going to be a trend. Yep.
He also had that catch and bulldog run where he almost scored
from
12 yards out. And
yeah, that's one of the incidents that we were talking about.
Right.
Black was like, oh, this is going to happen. And he was going to run up and be like, yeah, let's get this in there. And then he went down. He's like, oh. he wanted his bro to get like a mansome rugby scrum touchdown.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
So by now, I'm sure you've heard about HomeSure Lending and my friend Matt Demarest. I'm going to tell you once again, if you are buying or refinancing a house, this is who you got to call. Everyone who's used him so far from our site has said the same thing. And, you know, my experience itself, we just bought a house just a couple years earlier before we refinanced. And so we got to like see one-to-one comparison between the bank that we worked with and working with Matt. And it was just a completely different experience. He really knows the industry well. He knows what you need to provide him so you don't have to keep on going back and forth all the time. He can shop with different lenders so he can get you a priority with them. And like I said, everyone who's worked with him has gotten the same feedback. So if you are looking to buy or refinance your house, please go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog and Matt will set you up. That's HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Was biding my time, desperately I walked the line. Between health and poverty. I looked into a face and my thoughts, they were replaced. I had the nerve to call it soul. Get love where you find it.
So this also must be looked at with a heavy...
Through the lens of Rutgers.
Yes. The team that throws downfield once a game.
Yeah. We can start with Archer Sikowski's stat line.
Sure.
He completed 17 of his 24 passes, but they went for 106 yards with a long of 17.
So he averaged like 6 yards of completion.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that, I mean, that pretty much says it all. Like, I think they literally threw one past the sticks on, well, more than 10 yards downfield once.
Yeah, because both of his longest completions were catch and runs.
Right, on mesh, which we got to talk about. Because one of them was like a pretty blatant offensive pass interference.
Yeah.
But even if that wasn't a pretty blatant offensive pass interference, it was going to work anyway. Like, they didn't need to do it.
No.
Because there was, it was man coverage. There's so much traffic that McGrone is never getting through that and being productive. And it gave people some kind of flashbacks to the Ohio State game last year.
Yeah.
Understandably. And I think Michigan is doing a much better job of running a lot of zone. They ran a ton of zone in this game. And shutting stuff like that down, but kind of...
And I think they recognize that, I mean... someone pointed out that Metellus was like yelling at McGrone before that play that he needed to get over the top of that. And McGrone, being a young middle linebacker, maybe just did not get the message.
But even if he gets over the top
of it, it's a tough play to make.
It's a conversion, and then he tackles after like 7 yards instead of 20.
Yeah.
And that's so better. But
it's better, but it's not good enough, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I remember this was back when Madison was DC. They were playing, wow, this is a deep cut. They were playing Michigan State. Michigan State ran a ton of mesh, and there was a play on which he dropped off two defensive linemen, basically, and basically had them anticipating mesh, and like they were going to post these receivers up, and then the linebackers were going to blitz. And then Jake Ryan didn't do it. So so he was...
This guy was a deep cut.
The guy was wide open, and I was like, oh, man, Madison must have been pissed off about that, because the blitz got through, and if that guy's delayed, you know, it's a quarterback sack instead of a conversion. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see some kind of like mesh defense, because once you are in the mesh, it's not that hard to like identify as a defensive back. You know, your number two wide receiver goes vertical, and if you look up and there's a guy coming towards you, like, I feel like you should be able to be like, all right, I need to put this guy in the ground. Because, or just try something along those lines where it's like, you have a guy running towards you. It's legal to just light him up. Maybe just light him up. And, but because the man-to-man stuff is obviously very difficult to run when mesh is such a threat.
Yes.
So
that was Rutgers' only offense at this game.
Pretty much. And Michigan did do a good job of mixing it up, running a lot of cover two. So was that fourth and one where they just kind of flipped it in the flat to the running back?
Yeah, expecting to get a pick, but...
Right, but when it's cover two... And
there's nobody to pick.
Ambry's just waiting for him.
Yeah, just waiting for him, makes a tackle for no yards.
Yeah.
And Michigan didn't disguise that at all either.
Rutgers.
We're clearly not running man coverage this time. They're just like, this looks like man coverage. Like,
no, that was a gift.
It does not look like man coverage. So they are more diverse, like I'm charting a lot more two high plays this year than last year. So last year, it was very, very frequently one high. The year before that, it was almost exclusively one high, and now it's probably a majority of two high snaps. So okay. I think they did kind of look at what happened last year in the Ohio State game and say that this can't happen again, but working through that is a process.
Well, and a lot of their players are different too, right? Like they're having to...
Yeah.
Bring in different guys that are maybe not used to running that stuff.
Yeah, I mean their personnel is definitely a lot different.
So,
Dwumfor came back, looked fairly decent, had one good interior pass rush.
Yeah,
no, he was out there.
And that's important. That's important.
I think that was the big thing. He was out there, didn't leave.
Step one.
Yeah, he was out there. He didn't leave. He played decently.
Rutgers didn't have any sort of running game, so
yeah, which was going to happen either way. But.
Yeah.
Equity Pay was able to get a sack, have some other pressures. I'm still a little skeptical that's going to translate to
better offensive lines.
Like a couple of his pressures were just like, oh my God, what are you doing? And one of them was definitely against the tackle that went out and came back in limping and then left immediately after.
Yeah, I know when they replayed it on the broadcast and they showed like the dude just like, he basically blew a tire on that play.
Yeah.
And it was, he held and, yeah, because he knew that he was going to fall over, right, probably.
And the sack he got, if you look at it more carefully, it's more of an Uche sack because he drives the left tackle directly into the quarterback, and he's about to throw. He has to delay because he got hit by his own guy, and then that gives Pay the time to get around and make the sack. So split credit there. We've seen a lot of Quiddy Pay against not Rutgers, and he's not really a dynamic rusher.
Yeah, nice to see Uche incorporate a power move.
Yes, well he
got shot out of a cannon a couple times again.
They tried to screen with him rushing the quarterback, and that just
no.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, Sikowski just sort of chucked it.
I mean, that was one of his like first like eye opening plays. Maryland ran a screen with him on the field like 2 years ago, and it didn't work because he was just to the quarterback too fast. So if they got to just figure out ways to get him on the field. He probably got half the snaps again, and it's just like he's one of our best players. Period. And
yeah.
He's not on the field half the time.
But he didn't hold up real well last week, right? And that's probably why he can't be on the field.
Well, I don't think that it's about him not holding up. It's the fact that you can't play three defensive linemen against Wisconsin, especially when your defensive tackles are weak.
Yeah, it seems like the key to getting Uche on the field is having like competent DT play.
You just have to get, you have to get in passing downs, right?
Passing downs is going to be out there every time.
Right. But if your opposition is constantly head of the sticks,
yeah,
it's going to be very difficult.
Yep. McGrone got a start. Looked pretty good.
Yeah. He is fast to the ball.
I mean, he's like the upside of this, right? Like, we've seen Ross. Well, Ross was hurt. He was in a boot. And then Anthony got pulled last week. And now we've seen McGrone come in and actually make sort of Bush-esque plays every now and then.
Yeah. So, interesting thing is John Doerr on Twitter was just kind of posting him in zone coverage. So the things that pop out to just anybody watching the game are like, wow, that guy's fast. That's a really nice blitz. He had good coverage on that running back the one time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, being able to look up the number two receiver and then seeing that he's going vertical and then being able to come off on a shorter route, that's something that...
That's the more difficult linebacker stuff.
Right. Like, yeah, just having that kind of comfort as part of a scheme and executing it well, that's nice to see.
Did you think his DPI was... legit or
it was legit.
Okay.
I mean, he got there early.
Yeah.
But
he was there.
That's right. Yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't mind that because I want you to time it right. But if you're in that kind of spot where you're able to make a play on the ball, that's better than.
But you have to read it first, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah, it was a mess up. But, in terms of is it concerning? No. You want him to do a little bit better, but it's fine. And then as a blitzer, he was excellent. Like, he got some free runs, but he also was able to attack half an offensive lineman a couple of times to get some pressure. Like, he had that stick last week against Wisconsin on the quarterback. Like, mm-hmm. He looks like...
He's going to be a player.
Yeah, and I don't know if what they're going to do if and when Ross gets back, because Ross was very good last year and has not been good this year.
And has not played a whole lot in addition to that.
Yeah, and right? I don't know if it's injury holding him back or if... It's just something about the whole team-wide kind of malaise got to him as well.
Got the bug.
It's spreading.
It's possible. Dax Hill got in some time. People are totally hyped about the fact that he lit up a guy.
That's just
lighting up a guy on the punt return thing was, he also lit up a guy on a throw to the flat, which was nice.
Yeah.
And he evaded a blocker to do it.
Yes.
I want to give that punt returner some props, some dap. What are the kids calling it now? Cheese. I'm going to give him some cheese. Because he took one for the team there. Because that super high bounce, he sees that bounce and he's like...
He could have just let that go for like 20 more yards.
And it's just in the air at the apex. And he's like, God damn it.
This guy needs...
just like, yeah. The thoughts that went through his head as that ball is up there. Because out of the corner of his eye, it's like, there is a maze of blue flash.
This is a man with peripheral vision.
He's not blind.
And he's playing on Rutgers, and the score is like 70 billion to zero. And he's like...
And he still is like,
oh, okay.
This is still better than my special teams coach yelling at me.
And he saved his team probably 10 yards. So...
Which in this game, critically important... And he gave his highlight.
All the
bless that Rutgers return, man.
all that dap cheese to that guy.
Hill also made a play sort of in space where one of the running backs got outside around the contain, and Hill had sort of a lunging ankle tackle that looked like, obviously it was in garbage time, but he was going to get down the sideline for a decent gain, and Hill kind of pulled him down after 2 or 3 yards.
Okay.
So, like, that was kind of, that's the kind of athleticism we've sort of expect from him, especially with, we've seen him, he's obviously good in coverage, but coming up and be able to make plays in the run game like that as well is, like, how that has to get you on the field.
Yeah, and then, as mentioned, he did defend that screen pretty well.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other part of it, yeah.
Harbaugh said after the game that they're going to get him on the field more, and that is not a surprise.
No, I mean, this was kind of the time when you thought, even though Dax Hill wasn't immediately a starter in the secondary, but like the Rutgers game was going to be like, let's start working that in.
Yeah. So he probably slides in the nickel?
I don't know. I mean, they've been playing Jamarik Woods a little bit. I think he would probably take all of Jamarik Woods' snaps.
Who was also not dressed.
How long is Woods going to be able to hold off Hill? Probably not that long.
Sure. So then are you kind of playing three safeties or like, because you're probably not taking Hawkins and Metellus off, right?
No, I wouldn't. So I think that's what their nickel is.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams whose nickel is a three safety look.
Okay.
Yeah, and when your alternative is like, it's Vincent Gray, okay, so that's okay. But
so it's probably going to come at the cost of Gray at this point.
Gray or possibly a linebacker, mm-hmm. depending on how they feel about...
And the situation and all that. Okay.
In a little bit of a different vein in terms of freshmen, no Mazi Smith, no Chris Hinton until like super, super late.
Mm-hmm.
And that is...
Would have really liked to see those guys out there.
We've seen some defensive tackles Michigan has put out there, and it's like...
Did you see Jeter before late time, too?
Yes.
He was out there.
Early enough?
He got some rotation snaps.
Okay.
He was clearly behind Dwumfor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he got some rotation
snaps. But for,
snaps.
Like, just Spate to be out there before Smith is really not ideal.
Yeah. And I know, one of our... mantras on the site is that freshman defensive tackles and wide receivers suck.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But,
But another one is like 270-pound converted fullbacks.
I mean, that's not a mantra. Tackles. Who needs that for a mantra?
Well, we do have a position switching is bad mantra.
Yes. True.
And that it's worse when you're, say, like flipping sides of the ball.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That probably makes it even worse.
Yeah, that is true. Hutchinson had a nice game, had that fourth down stop.
Yep.
Also contributed to a third and one stop when he dropped into coverage.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing some zone games.
Yep. Will any of this mean anything against Iowa?
Probably not. But like, but that's a legit question. What do you, if you've seen any of Iowa or have looked at their statistics or anything, how do you feel? I mean, are you like, oh, nope, they're going to beat us by 30? Or are you like, Michigan can win this game?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, if you told me a spread for the Iowa game, I would believe anything.
Anything?
I mean, within reason.
Okay. Ace is just
trying to figure out what possibly, like, what number.
What number?
I mean, I can't imagine a spread of more than, like, 6 or 7 points either way.
But either way, you'd be like, all right, I guess.
Yeah.
So take the points, I think, is what we're saying.
So if Iowa wins by 3 scores, you're not surprised.
I would be surprised just because it's Iowa.
Yeah.
Like they don't
Rhode Iowa.
Although, like, you know that Ferentz is we did it to Crist. We unturtled Paul Crist. And then he went right back to it.
I know. Oh my gosh.
He punted from the +36 on 4th and 4.
Aren't we stepping on the third segment?
Yes. We are. Sorry.
This is what happens when you're Michigan.
All right. I think we're done talking about the defense. Let's take a break and stop stepping on this third segment.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, "That's what your next ad should be." So here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's $529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess. You use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security.
Performance. Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Time for the hot take of the week. I don't know what that was.
What impression was that?
I don't know what that was.
I don't know what that was either, but I think you should mention who it's brought to you by.
Brought to you by Fuego Box.
There we go. Very professional.
Yes. So, Ace, what's your hot take of the week?
My hot take is that Rutgers should stay in the Big Ten.
That's what?
No!
That is the hottest of all takes.
That is the hottest take.
You've gone full Ed Fay.
That is terrible.
I needed that relaxing weekend. Oh, I really needed it. I had the game recap done like
first quarter,
halfway through the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
I just
you
had
also
to fill
had
in
a,
some stats.
Yeah, the game recap done halfway through the fourth quarter last week.
That
too.
Was a different circumstance. I enjoyed that less.
That's a phenomenal hot take.
This was a more relaxing
it
experience.
I can't even come close to topping that.
Ace just won hot takes.
Yeah, he did.
I did it.
Woo! I have to end this segment.
Yeah, are you guys even going to go for
I
it?
Got,
or
I mean,
are we just done now?
No, we have a contract ability.
Do I like win a Fuego box or something?
You should.
I'll bring you some hot sauce next week.
Brian should sign you up.
Dave, your hot take.
So I wanted to give a shout out to all of the Milton must start folks. That is my hot take.
That's not a hot take unless you think you should start.
No, I don't.
That's not a hot take.
You're just acknowledging a really like a fiery.
I think
your hot take.
But I think that reading all of those things was like that he needs to start is the hot take.
Man, this has been a roller coaster of a segment, hasn't it?
we're really.
I think I'm going to land in the middle.
Can you get
Cam McGrone is going to be the starting linebacker, middle linebacker for the rest of the season.
Okay,
that's not a hot take.
That is a hot take.
Why?
You got a returning starter.
Okay.
Who played well last year, got a good PFF grade. Everybody was talking nice things about him. Asserting that he just got Wally Pipped, I think that's a hot take.
Yeah, especially since the Wally Pipping happened versus Rutgers, and therefore it's tough to ascertain how meaningful it is.
It's a hot take. It's not as hot as your take, but it's not like...
Yeah, I mean, I spit the hottest fire take that we could have possibly put out here.
Didn't you...
It was the Dylon of takes, and that's tough to match.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, come on.
Dylon?
Have you watched Chappelle's Show?
I've watched parts of Chappelle's Show, but I didn't watch it consistently. Sorry. I thought it was something cool and new, but
I was hoping you could name the five greatest rappers on earth, but apparently not.
Are they all Dylan?
They're Dylon. Yes.
I see. I just thought it was some sort of weird like reference about white people. I knew that came from Chappelle's Show. I just didn't know how to pronounce it. I have not seen that sketch. I'm sorry, Ace.
Disappointed.
Are you more disappointed in me or this guy who doesn't even have a hot take? You know what, Dave?
I thought it was legit.
Do you know what you need?
Do I need Fuego Box?
You need Fuego Box because they will ship you three hot sauces every month to spice up your palate and your takes. Enter MGOBLOG10 at FuegoBox.com for $10 off.
So before we get into all of the game theory stuff, I wanted to give a shout out to the 10 people dressed as Elvis sitting in the top of the student section. So all the students didn't really fill in, and so there's just like this.
Wait. They didn't fill in?
No. Surprisingly. Right. No, which whatever. I don't care. That's old news. So
yeah.
Then there's just this blank space of no one, and except for 10 people in white rhinestone jumpsuits, all dressed as Elvis, just sitting there.
How did you know they were Elvis costumes?
I mean, you could tell. And then they put them on the big screen.
Maybe it was 10 Liberace impersonators.
Possibly, but then when they played Jailhouse Rock at the game, and they all started dancing and hip swinging, I was pretty sure. And that was kind of like a fun new thing that I was like, okay, this is enjoyable in the third quarter, fourth quarter of a Rutgers blowout.
Hawkeye Elvis is going to be like, come on, guys. That's my shtick.
Yeah, and Elvis Gerback hasn't been around for a while, so.
It's true.
Maybe he was one of them. They're probably about that age.
They need to get Smotrich's Lobstriches back.
That was pretty solid, too.
Yeah.
All right, we can get into your game theory stuff now. I wanted to get that shout out in.
All right. There wasn't a whole lot of special teams in game theory for the Rutgers game. We should note that they had two back on punt returns for much of the day,
mm-hmm.
which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Sandra still did a
muff one.
And then there was the block in the back on Peoples-Jones' return. That was a Rutgers guy blocking another Rutgers guy in the back.
Strong strategy if you're going to give up a decent return, evidently, might get the flag.
Who's 17? The poor guy wearing 17.
For?
Michigan.
Faustin?
Is that Faustin?
I think so.
So he's running down there, and he's not touching this Rutgers guy. And then they run into each other, and then Faustin is like, bumps into the guy because his momentum suddenly stops. I don't know if that's what they got him for, but that's a really annoying way to have a really good punt return wiped off the board.
It was unfortunate. Bad. At least it happened against Rutgers.
Yes. God, if that had happened in a real game.
And the turnover luck was slightly more in Michigan's favor this time.
Yeah, a little bit. But what are you going to do? Yep. All right. We have a couple of interesting game theory issues across college football. One is in Northwestern Wisconsin, where Wisconsin has a 24-3 lead.
But it was like 7-3 for so much of this game. Was that not frustrating?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Sorry. Continue.
Dave. it is very clear that there are many teams in the Big Ten that have a better defensive tackle situation than Michigan. Would you like me to emphasize that further?
No, you can continue.
Thank you. So, Northwestern scores a touchdown. They're down 24-9. Fitz goes for two.
Okay.
So, we've talked about this before and how no one would ever do it. But when you're down multiple touchdowns, going for two is kind of as a freebie because you get decisions in the future if you're going to win this game based on going for two early.
Yeah.
So, you can, if you have a 40% chance of getting the two, you have a 40% chance of winning the game if you get your touchdowns, if you go for it first. So then you have a 60% chance of losing the game if you don't get it. But you get a second bite at the apple. So if you fail on the first two-point conversion, you can buy back some of that on the second two-point conversion, and then the odds that you win increase. And that's what
And you know how to manage the clock.
Right. And no, this is a slightly different situation.
Okay.
Because instead of needing to manage the clock, you're trying to win in regulation instead of go to overtime.
Yeah.
So this is like the down two touchdowns, except they're down three and they're going for it. And I think that's why they did it. And you would never do it when you're down two touchdowns, because coaches are weird. So that's correct. Even if you don't have a great chance of getting the 2-point conversion. And that's interesting because of all people, Pat Fitzgerald is the one
noted
to do it. And then he's like, our analytics said it was a good idea.
Expert Pat Fitzgerald. Good God.
And he's right. Which doesn't explain any of his fourth down decisions ever, but we're just going to move on from that.
You know.
We're just...
Didn't he make a comment about that in like Media Day one somewhere? He was like against some of those things. But then now it's like apparently figured it out in the next 3 months.
Right. So now they're down 8. Well, now they score another touchdown. They've missed the first 2-point conversion. So it's 24-15.
Uh-huh.
They go for 2 again. And this one's obvious.
Yes.
But people have the same complaint every time.
This one is much more obvious.
So...
Because you're going to have to get one at some point.
You're going to have to get a 2-point conversion at some point. And if you do it early, you know if you got it or not. And it's not about it being a 1-score or 2-score game. Because if you're down 8 points, you don't know if it's a 1-score or 2-score game. You think it's a 1-score game. You hope it's a 1-score game. But half the time, it's a 2-score game. So you don't know what to do.
How many times have we had this conversation on this podcast?
But people are still wrong about it.
I know. It was more commentary on college coaches than
and Twitter.
Us.
I love Matt Hinton. Matt Hinton is my favorite college football writer.
National college football guy.
And even he was like, I don't know why they went for two there. And I'm like, Matt, come on.
Maybe we should have him on to talk about this
segment. No, I'm not going to have him on and like rant at him.
Hey, Matt, I thought you were wrong about this. Let's talk.
Hey, jerk face.
Defend yourself.
Let's have a 50-minute conversation about this one thing.
I'm going to yell at you.
Hey.
Sounds like off-season content.
Off-season content. If we lost this game, this whole podcast was going to be you and me making eggs.
I didn't know. I figured that we would all have been like fired and you would have moved to Alaska to be a bear. I think you threatened that at one point.
I think that was definitely a if we lose this game, yes.
Okay.
Anyway, the other major... game theory issue in last week's college football was UNC Clemson, where UNC scores to tie the game late, except they go for 2 instead of kicking the extra point.
And there's about, what, 126?
119 on the clock.
Okay.
And Clemson has 2 timeouts.
Right.
This is where we have a bit of a disagreement.
Right. You're like, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, because Clemson's going to try to score before overtime no matter what.
Okay.
You're North Carolina. You are... by far the inferior team. They are very lucky to be in that game in the first place based on yardage.
Was it that bad based on yardage? I thought it was surprisingly
I didn't see the yardage. But
I believe Carolina was... I can pull it up. But
yeah, give me the box score. Because that does have an effect. Like, if you're in a fairly even game, even though you feel like the other team has superior talent, that's kind of a different situation than, like, they've outgained us by 200 yards. So it does change your equation, I think, just in the moment.
Okay, it wasn't... The main thing was Carolina's offense was struggling. They only had 290 yards.
Okay.
Clemson finished with 331. So Clemson's offense was shockingly... I did not realize how much Clemson's offense was struggling. But I still think in that game, especially with the talent that Clemson's got, where they can just like put it up to T. Higgins and...
Yeah.
I mean, it's similar to that when Michigan tried to go for 2 against Ohio State with like 40 seconds left in 2013, right?
That's a different situation.
A little bit less time.
Because...
opponent doesn't have much of a passing game.
Yeah,
they have Braxton Miller. They're moving anyway.
So it does change based on the amount of time left. Like,
yeah, those extra 30 seconds matter. I'm
40 seconds, and that's a ton.
Yeah.
So especially when you just need a field goal, right? So
I think if you're Carolina and you've got one play with a chance to put you in a position to win against Clemson, you have to take it.
Okay, but you didn't. Because you had a speed option on the goal.
Well, yeah. Obviously, so, you call a different play because running laterally against Clemson is a bad idea pretty much anywhere on the field and definitely down there when so, everything's condensed.
So this situation really comes down to if you have a play. Like, if you have a two-point play that you've built into your offense that you're going to use at some point.
Well, everybody's got a two-point play. It's just how the hell was it that?
Well,
like every team's got a two-point play. So, like, I think the decision was correct,
North Carolina.
And the play call was about as bad as it gets.
Right, so the decision was right, the execution and...
See, I don't necessarily agree that the decision was right.
Well, I know you
don't. Because Clemson is going to try to score, but the desperation with which they try to score when they're down a point versus tied is a lot different.
You don't think they're going to be desperate to avoid overtime against Carolina?
I mean, I think if it's a fourth down, they're going to punt.
Okay, I mean, yeah.
So, like, and I think that there's, when you are down a point, there is a psychological difference. I mean, we saw this with Lloyd Carr versus Tide. And, like, there are ways in which coaches will always kind of default into being the more conservative version of it.
Yeah, I just don't know if, like, the extra juice that gives Clemson totally offsets the, like, you might actually be able to win this in regulation and avoid overtime.
Okay, but...
Then where they are, like...
So it's like, okay...
Like, the chances are they are going to pull away.
But what are their chances in overtime? Are UNC's chances in overtime 20%, 30%, 40%? Because if they're anywhere in the ballpark of what it is to get 1 2-point conversion, then I think the fact that you've incentivized Clemson to go win in regulation overwhelms the two-pointer. So I just don't like it there. I like it with 20 seconds left. I like it with 30 seconds left. I'm not sure about a buck 20 and two timeouts.
So in ESPN's game cast thing, they have the win probability. It goes from 62.3% to 99.9%. And I'm assuming that's on that two-point play. So
on the two-point play, Clemson had a 62% chance of winning.
Right, when they were lining up to go for two.
Right.
Clemson had a 62.3, whatever.
So, like, to me, that's not enough of a overtime disadvantage to be like, all right, we need to go for two here.
I think if you're a 38, I mean, like,
But, like, what did you, like, the conversion rate for
I really think
is general, about 45%, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
With the caveat here that you call a much better freaking play than what they called, I think if you're Carolina and you're in position to put Clemson in a spot where they could lose,
yeah,
you do it.
I mean, I agree with Ace. I was glad they went for two. I, again, wish they had a better two-point play or executed something better than a kick pitch. But I don't know. I think it's good for the game. I enjoy seeing that kind of stuff.
I mean, good
and
for the
Clemson
game.
Clemson wasn't moving the ball great through the air, so like
I know, but they're also not going to be moving the ball. I mean, like it's the same team you're going to be playing in overtime. So
yeah, but they only have to cover 25 yards instead of the entire part of the field.
I mean, who are the odds of Clemson
and
or
just
North?
Run Travis Etienne.
I hate when the other team needs a field goal to win. I just think that's not a good situation to put yourself in. Like, similar
college
to,
kickers, man.
I know, but...
But also, you have to think that Clemson probably has a better kicker than North Carolina. So maybe
like,
not,
it's,
but...
It's similar to, like, when you're up three late and you kick a field goal to go up six. To me, that doesn't help you at all.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. All right, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Yeah. We can agree that the play call is freaking terrible.
So can we just
so upset about that.
Just as a counter to this, and again, this is getting into the next segment, but when Indiana decided to kick an extra point with 2 minutes left to tie the game against State, to tie it at 31,
yeah,
they had two timeouts and there was 2 minutes, so that is the right decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't disagree there. Also, right. The talent gap is smaller between those teams.
Sure.
Considerably. All right, let's take a break, come back, talk to Jamie.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
We'll be right back.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Why do you do what you do? I grew up in the small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed great people I care about making a lot of poor financial decisions. I thought to myself, I never want to be in that position, putting my retirement at risk. Now we want to make sure that your retirement is not at risk. And by providing education and guidance, we inspire our clients to make great decisions, putting them on a path to be able to retire with confidence. I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP, President and Founder at
Peak Wealth Management.
And that's my why.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hindsight's given me too much memory. It's too much never seen. It's always there. It's everywhere. Taking my own advice. Worked out for the nights. Now I come to find the tricks you play.
Welcome in, Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you all doing?
Well, nothing bad happened this weekend.
Yeah, that's sort of what I figured. I mean, the worst thing that happened was Ohio State looking awesome, but they looked like this every week. So, like, that was just sort of like, okay, they still look like a monster.
Gotten pretty used to that.
Yeah. Let's get through the three clunkers this week. First, Iowa 48, Middle Tennessee 3. Nate Stanley goes for 11 yards an attempt. Their running backs go for, 12 and 8 yards an attempt. Middle Tennessee's all perimeter offense can't really do anything. Iowa puts up 644 yards of offense, which you know they weren't trying to do. That only happens by accident.
Yeah. I kind of like their, at the start of the year, we were wondering if they had any skill position players, but I'm starting to like all those guys, and it'll be interesting to see if Michigan can contain some of them next week. They kind of have a three-headed monster at running back with Sargent, Young, and Goodson, and between them, they're averaging 6.2 yards per carry this season. They have 721 combined yards, and Sargent has really come along as a player. Iowa bloggers are raving about his newfound ability to find all the right cut lanes. And the Goodson kid is their stud recruit from Georgia who didn't play much in the first couple of games, but the last two he's played a bit and he's got some jump.
Yeah. The one thing about Iowa is that, you know, they were outgained, I think, considerably by Iowa State, and they've played a couple of meatballs. So it's like, you don't really know how much of that is going to translate to a higher level defense.
This was also Kinnick, Iowa, and the Iowa State game notably was not Kinnick, Iowa.
Also, we don't know if Michigan has a defense that is at the level that shuts down an Iowa.
No.
Also true.
I don't know what to expect out of Michigan's defense in this game, to be honest with you. I mean, Iowa is a little bit like a mini Wisconsin, you know, they're gonna have some beefy fronts and it'll be interesting to see if Michigan can just do anything with it.
Yep.
Didn't you say that they have good tackles, but the interior O-line is maybe not so great?
Well, they had some injury. I don't know. Like, Tristan Wirfs went out briefly. I think he must be back.
He's been back.
Yeah, yeah. He's been back. So, Alaric Jackson also kind of got carted off in their opener. I don't know what his status is. But, you know, Iowa is similar to Wisconsin in that they do one thing. They do it all the time. They're an inside zone team.
Yeah.
And the variance in the quality of their offensive line is not high. It's pretty much the same every year until they have like Robert Gallery or Jackson at tackle.
For what it's worth, Jackson has still been out, but it sounds like he could be back as soon as, this week.
All right.
What do you know?
Yeah, my take on Iowa's interior line is they're starting a redshirt freshman at center, and people think he's going to be the next great interior lineman. He played defense last year, and they flipped him over during the bowl game and during bowl preparation. And, like, you know, anytime over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, I would have liked Michigan's chances in a matchup like that. But the kid's been playing pretty well, and, you know, we know that Michigan's got some issues on the inside of their line.
That's one way of putting it.
I mean, you're hoping that Mike Dwumfor makes a big difference, and there's a shot that that does actually make a big difference.
So. Well, I mean, hey, at least he's a big guy in there.
Yes, that is something that is to be looked for, a big man.
We are in search of large people.
All right, moving on to the second ugly blowout of the week. Point Josh Gattis as Penn State skunks Maryland 59-0. Total yards in this are 619 to 128. This is a team that put up 63 points on a then-ranked Syracuse team.
They, like, yanked Josh Jackson for one series in here and tried out Piggy and then went right back to Jackson.
Seems like
they're in a bit of a state of flux all of a sudden.
3.1 yards an attempt, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. How can Piggy be worse? Go with Piggy.
Yeah, I mean, his QBR of 4.4 was higher than Josh Jackson's of 3.8. So.
Wow.
anyway, Sean Clifford goes for 13 yards in attempt. What? KJ Hamler has an explosive play where he suns a bunch of Maryland defenders. What a weird team. Both of these teams are just incredibly strange. Like, So Maryland gives the boots to Syracuse. Penn State is in a dogfight with a bad Pitt team, and they're in a dogfight with a Buffalo before pulling away late.
Both at home.
With Buffalo, not a Buffalo.
Right.
Or 11 Buffalo.
And then they come in, both of these teams come into this game and then they do this.
I would watch Penn State fight a Buffalo.
Anyway, Jamie.
I'm having a hard time hearing you guys.
Well, fair.
Jamie's just trying to quit out of this ridiculous turning conversation.
I mean, last 3 years, it's 162-3 is the, or I'm sorry, 163-6 is the composite score in this matchup. They have to do something different with Josh Jackson. They were having him stand in the pocket, trying to run some longer routes. You know, and this is a team with all sorts of skill players, good catch and run guys, and their offensive line cannot handle a defensive front like Penn State's, and it just showed throughout, and they just, I felt like just an incorrect game plan. Jackson was averaging 8.3 yards per run or throw in his first two games, and that's down to below 4 in these last two games. And, you know, Temple and Penn State have some very good front sevens. They're going to face some good front sevens later on in Big Ten play, and they just can't block anybody. And now they're down 2 starters on the right side. They were already down Terrence Davis, and their right tackle, Minor, went out in this game. So I think more trouble ahead on that front. They've got to – and maybe Piggy is a better answer at this point because, you know, he can move around faster back there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But we play both of these teams, and I don't know what to expect from either one of them, really.
No. I mean, Penn State, Clifford looked great. I mean, it was the best game he'd played, but otherwise it was sort of the same thing, a couple big plays, you know, or nothing, and they're still struggling. It's hard to nitpick a 58-0 box score or whatever it was, but they're still not really running the football that effectively.
Yeah, Sean
and they're still trying to figure out which one of their 4 running backs they want to give the ball to more. So they're still figuring out a lineup almost.
All right, moving on. Ohio State 48, Nebraska 7. Moving on.
Yeah.
Who thought this was going to be the primetime game of the week?
If you looked at the other options,
it was a bleak week out there.
Like there was,
I understand
a 3-hour period where that game and Auburn Mississippi State were the only two games on.
I was not watching college football for a
so there's it was a two by it's a two by year. So there's a number of weeks kind of early when there's a lot of teams that are off and kind of you see the effects.
Utah Washington State would have been more interesting.
That Auburn game was just as much of a blowout as this one was. And I'll be honest, I spent most of my time during the primetime block watching the Arkansas State-Troy game, which ended 50-43 Arkansas State. I just fired that one up on ESPN3 and just watched that one instead.
I thought it was going to say Great British Baking Show.
That is actually what I was watching.
Oh, awesome. Wisconsin 24, Northwestern 15. Little frustrating to see Wisconsin rack up 243 total yards a week after obliterating Michigan's defense.
But when you're going against Mick McCall,
you could go through Jack Cohn stats.
Sure, let's. I don't want to do that.
No.
Yeah.
He's 15-24, 4.7 yards an attempt, no touchdowns, one interception. Taylor gets his 100 yards, but at 4.6 yards a carry. Yikes. Like, everybody knew that Northwestern's offense was going to do what Northwestern's offense does. But
which is nothing.
For their defense to give it to Wisconsin in this fashion, I think two of their touchdowns were defensive touchdowns, if I'm correct.
Well, yeah. It was 7-3 late in the third quarter, and the Badgers then got two defensive touchdowns to extend their lead. I mean, Northwestern had zero offense. They were in second and third and long all day, and yet there they were late in the third quarter, just one big play away from the lead, down 7-3. And before the first defensive score to take it to 14-3, Northwestern had a long punt return that would have set them up in a scoring opportunity, but it got called back on a penalty. And then on the ensuing first down play, Wisconsin called a safety blitz with the Burrell kid who had the targeting penalty, one of the targeting penalties last week, and just, I mean, he just threw him around in a circle and the ball just landed in the end zone and some fat Wisconsin lineman grabbed it. At that point, the game was over. I know Wisconsin, or Northwestern rather, pushed some offense on the board late in the game when it was 24-3, but I mean, they're just way little too late. And I think there's some freaky offense there. They got an extra possession on an onside kick late in the fourth quarter. They got an extra possession because Wisconsin muffed a punt. So, you know, I feel that this was just Wisconsin just taking Northwestern's offense and bending it over its knee. And in the second half, Wisconsin punted at Northwestern's 36, Northwestern's 48, and their own 46 on three possessions to open the second half. And it was all because I think Paul Chryst, part turtle, but also part he knew he could win this game 7-3.
Yeah. It's still like for Wisconsin to go from last week to 243 yards this week, it does not make me feel
four for 16 on 30.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the Badgers had an easy touchdown on their first drive of the game, and then their next 12 drives only had one score, and that was a field goal. And they ended up with 9 punts. They had 5 three and outs after having only 3 of those coming into the game. And then they had 4 other first down and outs, and then they had another first down, and then Cohn threw an interception. So they just had no sustainable offense after that opening drive.
And Northwestern pulled Hunter Johnson, I think, or did he get hurt?
I believe he got hurt.
Okay.
He played terribly.
How could you tell?
And then he got hurt.
This is fascinating because I remember watching a high school game, because it was Brandon Peters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched
Hunter
that.
Johnson. Yeah. And I was like, man, Brandon Peters is a lot better than this 5-star guy, which is accurate.
Yeah.
But
it's true.
But also, level.
Yeah, the scale was not what we expected.
Actually, Peters was totally awesome in that game, but
he was
incredible.
Yeah. All right, final game of the week.
I think unfortunately, just at this exact point in time, Northwestern just has better players than Michigan, especially on its front seven. I mean, with the Gaz, that's a guy that Wisconsin has to kind of scheme against. Michigan right now doesn't have anybody in that front seven that they have to scheme against, and you know, Northwestern's defensive line played so much better than Michigan's, and by doing that, they allowed those two tackle machines, Patty Fisher and Gallagher, to just kind of come in and get their free shots on Taylor, and then those guys don't miss tackles, and nor did the Northwestern safeties, Whitlock and Pace, when they had to come up and run support.
I
and that, you know, and the other thing is Cone just did not play well. I mean, he just, the Hornibrook was strong in Cone yesterday. I mean, three different times he threw short of the sticks on third down. He killed the drive because he threw back-to-back passes in the flat that were uncatchable. He threw a slant into double coverage on second and nine. There was even no play action. It's like, what are you doing, Wisconsin, throwing the ball without play action? And then he threw a deep ball that was a little bit underthrown, that was easily picked off by J.R. Pace. And now they did play action on this one, but it was half-assed, and it was to Nakia Watson. So, like, Taylor wasn't even in the game. He had just given you back-to-back first downs. I mean, I know you don't want to, like, work him to death, but why not keep him in and do a real play fake to him? And then maybe Chiefus is wide open instead of covered like a blanket.
Indy, can we go back to the fact that Northwestern has added a Gallagher to Patty Fisher?
Right.
Did these guys all come over in the potato famine? What is going on?
Yeah, right. They're recruiting Ireland's rugby team.
Like, Fitzgerald is their coach, and he's a former linebacker. If their other linebacker is called O'Neill, I'm calling ice on these guys. I'm not. Never call ice on anyone. Anyway, Michigan State 40, Indiana 31, a classic in the Indiana tries and doesn't win genre.
Oh, boy, was it ever.
They come back and they tie the game with how much time left? It was like a was it 2 minutes?
Yeah.
And then on
it
the
was
very
less than 2 minutes, yeah.
The very first play of Michigan State's next drive, they give up like a 44-yard arm punt.
Sure.
Right.
From Brian Lewerke.
Yeah.
And so Michigan State kind of seems like they've gotten back to not last year's Michigan State, but the previous Michigan State, the 2017 Michigan State. You can tell this because Brian Lewerke is a functional human being at quarterback, 300 yards on 36 attempts, 3 touchdowns, 8.3 yards an attempt. And he is Michigan State's leading rusher.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
12 carries for 78
and
yards.
And only effective rusher.
And then the number two guy goes for 3.3 yards an attempt against Indiana.
Yeah, they did not have the ball in the third quarter, Michigan State. And then the fourth quarter, when they finally got possession more consistently, for all intents and purposes, they were just running a wildcat with Lewerke. I mean, and he was just, you know, getting nine yards here, you know, 11 yards there. And that, you know, that kind of helped him dominate the fourth quarter. And, you know, and kind of further put a punctuation mark on the whole, like, Indiana pulling the Indiana. After that long catch to Stewart to jumpstart the game-winning field goal drive, they let Lewerke scramble all the way down to, like, the two-yard line. But in typical Indiana fashion, they didn't let him score. They tackled him at the one, and then
that's right.
Yeah, and then you know, like to even try, like Michigan State ran like one real play before they kneeled on the ball, and they even tried to get him to score, and they wouldn't. So it's just like, you know, they couldn't even execute to let them score, you know, the right way.
Also, adding to the like Indiana big game loss factor was that the refs missed a really obvious block in the back on that Lewerke scramble, which would have made a big difference on the field goal attempt with Michigan State's really shaky kicker all of a sudden.
I mean, Indiana really did Indiana this because, you know, Penix is able to uncork some deep throws that are a yard away.
Yeah, WAP failure could have had like 250 yards in this game.
I mean, Donovan Hale also broke open deep and was missed.
They were up three and had one of the, and had, I think it was Filliard got behind him and kind of missed him by
over the top
about a yard. If that's slightly thrown or not quite as far, I mean it's a 10-point game. It's a 2-score game with how much left? Like most of the some of the fourth quarter.
I thought Filliard could have laid out for it and maybe got it. It would have been a great catch, but
he's not very tall.
No, but he's taller when he lays out than he is when he doesn't.
True.
Yeah. what was really frustrating about those misconnections is they had literally spent the whole game setting those up. I mean, Penix had like 20 completions in a row or something like that, but almost all of them were just real laterally. You know, I mean, name the wide receiver screen, the Hoosiers ran it yesterday. You know, so like they just were so patient, and then they took those chances in the fourth, and they couldn't connect. You know, you were waiting for them to maybe do that, and when they finally did, they were there, and they couldn't hit them.
And the failure overthrow is, I think, particularly relevant to Michigan because they catch quarters coverage. They have a slot receiver who
gets over the top of the safety,
runs right by the safety. And on Michigan, that's not going to be WAP Filliard. It's going to be Donovan Peoples-Jones. So
better chance catching that ball.
So,
oh, we saw it last year.
Even then, WAP Filliard still had a big game.
He did. Yes, he had 142 yards on 14 catches. A lot of those were screens. And
oh yeah,
you're going to have to incorporate those into Michigan's offense a little bit better?
Hey, they did one.
They did one. Did it work?
It did.
Okay.
Very well.
Well, they had a hard time covering Donovan Hale, too, though. I mean, he had 99 yards yesterday, and it seemed like he was open every time they went to him.
Yeah, they were both.
And on one play, when he wasn't open, he still was able to get up over Josiah Scott in the end zone for an easy touchdown catch, even though he was covered pretty well.
Yep.
There was a stretch here in this game where Indiana looked really good. They had four touchdowns out of six drives where they just marched the field on them. Three of those drives were over 80 yards. But we talk about how they're not Team Chaos anymore. They take every play almost down to to 1 or 2 seconds on the play clock. They were team ball control yesterday, and it almost paid off. But they just ran screen after screen, and they kept every play in bounds. Fowler was able to break a few tackles, so instead of getting 3 yards, he would get like 8 or 9 a pop. They actually looked so much better with Michael Penix at quarterback. He just is sharper than Ramsey.
Well, he is more of a running threat. He's more of a downfield threat. He's a completer quarterback than Ramsey, who's just a dink and dunk guy.
Yeah.
I actually forgot about Minnesota 38, Purdue 31.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a game.
Do you remember now?
That happened.
That did happen.
And we have to talk about it because this has got to be one of the most remarkable stat lines I've ever seen from a Big Ten quarterback. Tanner Morgan is 21 of 22 for 396 yards, 18 yards an attempt, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah.
Sounds very Big 12.
That is a Big Ten record for completion percentage with at least 15 attempts.
Jeez.
And Minnesota scored on 6 of their first 8 drives, and they averaged 48 yards per drive for the game.
Tyler Johnson didn't even have that big a game.
No, but Bateman did, so.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah, and Altman Bell had a big catch, too. They basically just, at strategic times, just RPO'd Purdue to death. You know, they had 3 times they ran, an RPO with just a quick slant with also a little, bubble screen sort of fakery going on to one side. And, Altman Bell was just wide open and ran for a 70-yard touchdown pass. And then later in the half, Rashad Bateman was wide open and, ran it into the red zone. And then in the second half, they started just basically going deep off the same RPO action. And Bateman caught a huge jump ball, and then Bateman had another 48-yard touchdown off that. So they really sort of just had their number whenever they called those plays.
And Purdue lost Elijah Sindelar and Rondell Moore on the same play early in this game.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Very disheartening. It looked like Sindelar either separated his shoulder, or something. He looked really bad, and Moore's injury actually looked worse. I mean, his leg was planted in the ground and just didn't go anywhere. And at one point he stood up to try to walk and he fell back to the ground, and the whole crowd went, whoa, you could hear this groan, even though the camera wasn't on it. The announcers had to explain what the groan was for.
Ugh.
But, that is not.
There hasn't been an update yet, but neither looked good.
That is not good
for
college football.
No.
Is not having Rondell Moore.
Yeah.
Can we get a Karlaftis transfer now?
So getting back to Tanner Morgan, he's on pace for 30 touchdowns this year.
I don't even...
So they could have, should have been 0-3, right? They could have lost, maybe should have lost 2 to 3 of those games, at least.
Yes.
And now they're 4-0.
Yeah, I mean, and I picked him.
And they get Illinois at home next week.
I picked him to win the West. It's going to happen.
No,
you got your oars out?
Row it up. That's their catchphrase.
They should still be in contention at least come November. I mean, you mentioned the Illinois game coming up, but they had games with Maryland and Rutgers also in October. So,
wow.
Big game with Nebraska in a couple weeks.
I didn't even know they pulled the perfect crossover.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might have to talk to our kids about an 8-0 Minnesota.
That's happened before, though, and Michigan has played them when they've been 8-0, and it hasn't gone well for Minnesota.
Rich Rod's first year, they were 7 or 8-0 going into the, or maybe 7-1 or 8-1 or something like that in the Brown Jug game.
Yeah, they finished with Penn State at Iowa, at Northwestern, and against Wisconsin, so they might come back to earth pretty hard.
Nah, they're going to.
But I think for now, can we maybe, because we talk about Indiana is no longer Team Chaos, and we put Maryland in that category, but boy, they throw up so many bad box scores. We should maybe consider Minnesota for Team Chaos. They had a one-play, 47-yard touchdown drive yesterday. They had a two-play, 75-yard touchdown drive yesterday. And they had a four-play, 90-yard touchdown drive yesterday.
They got to produce some chaos against a big-time opponent before I'm ready to embrace anybody else as
well. That's true, but we've also talked about their non-conference schedule, which they just had to work so hard in these topsy-turvy games against Group of Five teams. So, I mean, I'm kind of throwing that into the evidence bag.
But Purdue's also up there for that. Yeah. Like, you have a 29-point win over Ohio State the same year you lose to Minnesota 41-14. That's some team chaos right there.
Really, the whole Big Ten outside of Ohio State has a very explode in any direction feel.
Yeah, right.
Well, right.
Can I say one more thing about Minnesota?
Yeah.
So there was a Benjamin St. Juice sighting yesterday.
Not only that, he made the Pro Football Focus second team national team of the week.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my gosh! I thought I was digging deep, but TFF—they're always a step ahead. Yeah, he was in. He was credited for a share of a tackle for loss, and he had two pass breakups. And on these two pass breakups, he does this little thing where he kind of rubs the back of his side, like the thigh and his butt, like he's putting the receiver in his back pocket. Keep an eye out for that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
It's pretty good.
I'm going to be annoyed if he becomes like a really awesome player.
Yes, the
I will be too. He's making
guy.
The PSF mm-hmm. list. He's doing a cute little taunting move. And apparently, he's got two more years of eligibility left after this. Could that be correct?
Yes,
yep,
that is correct.
That's what the
official site says.
Yep. All right. Thanks for calling in, Jamie. We'll call you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Mace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Nasternak. And shout out to the official in the Michigan State-Indiana game who inexplicably signaled for a safety on Michigan State's game-ending fumble touchdown.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!